I just want to send out prayers to the ones that was lost last night. My fans really mean the world to me, and I always just really want to leave them with a positive experience. And anytime I can make out, you know, anything that's going on, I stop the show and, you know, help them get the help they need, you know? I could just never imagine the severity of the situation.
That was rapper Travis Scott, headliner of the Houston-based Astroworld Music Festival. He released the statement in response to tragic crowd surges, which left at least 8 people dead and 300 injured. Officials are investigating what happened this weekend at Astroworld. It's estimated that 50,000 people attended. But the lawsuits are piling up against Scott for, quote, negligence and encouragement of violence. After the break, we'll hear from someone who attended the festival that night and discuss what went wrong. This is the 1A Podcast. I'm Jen White. And remember to have your questions answered on future topics or just to let us know what you think. Tweet us at 1A.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Wyzant. Need a smarter way to learn anything? Wyzant is the nation's biggest network of professional tutors, connecting you with experts in more than 12,000 topics for personalized one-on-one lessons. On Wyzant, you choose how much to pay, who you work with, and when you meet, in person or online. NPR listeners can experience the difference personalized tutoring makes this back-to-school season by taking $25 off each of your first 3 lessons. Head to wyzant.com/NPR today to start learning.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
We're talking about Astroworld. Joining us now is Sophia Santana, who attended Astroworld and has been at other Travis Scott shows. Sophia, welcome.
Hi.
So I understand you just returned home to Los Angeles. How are you feeling after what you experienced this weekend?
I'm still a little shooken up, but it's okay. I'll get better, but slowly but surely.
Can you share with us where you were in the crowd?
I would say I was around like 10 to 15 feet in front of the concert.
When did you realize that something dangerous was starting to evolve?
I would say it would be right before the first song. Everyone was really like cramped into each other, and it was just hard to breathe. And I'm only 5'1", and I saw taller guys, and they were having a hard time breathing too. And I just knew right there something was really, really wrong.
How were you able to get out of the crowd?
I didn't get out of the crowd for like another hour.
Were you trying to get out at that point?
I was trying, and it just was no help. It was no use for me to get out. I got trampled over, and it just went downhill from there.
So you're in this crowd, you realize, okay, something dangerous is starting to happen. Walk us through your experience from that realization. What happened next?
So when I got like a feeling of really like a negative feeling, and I looked to my boyfriend and I looked at him. I was like, we have to get out of here. He grabs me by my hand and we're running out, and I'm screaming, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Let me out. And people were just not moving. There was people that would let me through, but others that would stand in my way. When that happened, everyone, it was kind of like a pressure. People trying to leave the crowd, but people trying to push forward to see Mr. Scott. And all that momentum and stuff had me fall over. And I lost my boyfriend and I ended up getting squished. I was trampled. I don't know if I know that I fell on someone, and I know two other people fell on me. And at that moment, I felt like I was going to lose my life. I couldn't breathe, and I kind of just accepted the fact that if this was the way that I passed, this was the way that I passed.
You're with us now, thankfully. Yeah. How did you get out of that situation?
Some random angel pulled me out. I'm so shocked at how he did that. Right before he did that, there was a person who was laying on top of me, and he used me as a stepping stool, knocked my air out, looked me in the face, and then continued walking forward to go see Mr. Scott instead of helping me up. A random stranger helped me up.
So you were eventually able to get off of the ground. I understand you actually helped other people as well. To talk about what you did.
So when I'm a registered nurse, so it's kind of my instinct to help. I'm not going to, if I'm in a mass casualty event, I find some way to help someone. And when I had gotten up, I had just seen bodies on the floor, and they were blue. So who knows how long they have been under there getting crushed by how many bodies. I kind of just stepped over the bodies and I stood to the middle and I looked around and I just saw all of them. And I took a little moment. I'm still pretty shaken up from myself for what I just went through. I looked to the side and there's this girl performing CPR on this other body. I see that she's not performing it correctly, so I step in and help. But once I realized that he had already passed and there's no need to do CPR on a person who is blue, and I would put my flashlight in their eyes and their pupils were not dilating or fixed, they were completely fixed, I had known he had passed. They had taken that body away. I stood up in the middle again, and then I see this other body on the floor, and they see this guy like frantically crying over this body. I just go up to him and I asked, does he have a pulse? And they check it for me, and he says it's small, but there is something there. So I just immediately start jumping in, and I try to do my best if possible. I lift his legs up. I have the crowd help me blow air into his face. I grabbed random hats from guys' heads, and I was just blowing air into his face. And slowly, you can see him progress upwards. Like, his chest, he wasn't breathing, but then his chest started to rise and fall by himself. And then he started to open his eyes. And it was just like a miracle. Like, he was coming back to life.
Sophia, how would you describe the atmosphere of other Travis Scott concerts you've attended?
They've been really enjoyable. It's been a really, really enjoyable experience. I would have never thought that this would have happened.
What seemed different, if anything, about this one?
It was just, there was the eerie feeling that something was wrong, even in the beginning. It was completely different compared to his other concerts. And all the people there, and being compressed against one another, not being able to breathe, and the complete disregard to human life when asking and begging to leave, and they would not let me go out. That's the difference.
I'm wondering how you think about Travis Scott now. He's been criticized specifically for not controlling the crowd. How are you feeling about him?
So I was a huge fan, and now I'm just very disappointed. I'm very sad. I remember chanting with the crowd as I was taking care of my friend who was on the floor to stop the show. Keep in mind, we're only 15 feet away from the front. We were chanting and screaming help at him, and his responses to us were, you know what you came here to do, and entice the audience more, which created more chaos. Or instead of acknowledging us, he acknowledged some guy in a tree. as we were only 15 feet away from his eyesight, there was a man in a tree who was probably 70 feet away from him, and he was able to acknowledge him and not us as we were begging for his help. And the worst thing out of it all was that when we had begged him to stop, he then responded with, "Who asked me to stop?" in a nasty tone.
Do you consider yourself a Travis Scott supporter on the other side?
Not anymore. Mm. Not anymore.
Is there anything you think he could do at this point or should do?
I think it's too late. I think it's too late. He could have done a lot more. There's reports of him saying that he found out about the Casualty incident right after the concert. So why didn't he go to the hospital and visit the families and his victims and all the people hospitalized? Why didn't he go out of his way and show care for his fans who were there and passed away for loving his music? Why hasn't he reached out to families yet? That, to me, speaks volumes about his character.
Sophia, how has this experience made you think about attending live music events in the future?
It's scary. It's scary. It is a really big deterrent. Just because of the safety of my life, if I were to attend a concert again, it would have to be like a really seated concert, or at least with seating. No general admission anymore, because it's scary.
Have you had a chance to connect with the young man you performed CPR on at the concert?
Yes, I have, and he's amazing. I'm so happy he made it. I'm so happy he made it.
Well, we're happy you made it, too. That's Sophia Santana, a registered nurse in Los Angeles and a survivor of the Astral World Music Festival in Houston. Sophia, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We reached out to Live Nation, the concert organizer and rapper and headliner of that festival, Travis Scott, for a statement, but have not heard back. But the offer still stands. Scott was performing when the crowd surged and reportedly refused to stop the show despite pleas from the crowd. Travis Scott has a reputation as hip-hop's King of Rage, a title he's gained through a fan culture based around high-energy performances to younger crowds. This latest tragedy isn't the first time that Scott has been criticized and sued for negligence related to fans' injuries sustained at his performances. So what responsibility does an artist have for crowd control? And what does this tragedy mean for Scott, his label, and concert promoters? Joining us now is Sydney Madden, a reporter for NPR Music and co-host of the podcast Louder Than a Riot. Sydney, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jen.
Also with us, Steve Allen. He's the founder of Crowd Safety. That's a security and crowd controlling consulting agency. He was also director of security for one of Eminem's world tours, among many other artists. Steve, welcome.
Hello.
Sydney, first, I want you to describe this crowd for us. What were the demographics of the audience there?
The demographics of this Travis Scott show, as many shows in his past, skew young, diverse, and hip-hop oriented, but more so just musical oriented. People who love to go to festivals, people who've been feeling bottled up in a year when coronavirus stopped all live performances. And Travis Scott, who is one of the kings of hip-hop live performances, this concert, this festival, was one of the most anticipated and highly lauded shows of the season.
What was significant about this festival, Sydney?
Well, first of all, this is Travis Scott's third festival, but first headlining festival in a post-COVID-19 world. So this was the first time a lot of fans were getting to see him perform in all of his trappings in a very long time, which, you know, seems arbitrary, but to a fan who is a diehard of him, if you go a year or months without seeing him, because Travis Scott is a very, very consistently touring performer, it can feel like so long. So there was so much anticipation in the crowd. And with hip-hop being the most consumed genre and the most marketed and most commercialized genre in the U.S. as of 2017, rappers are the new rock stars, and Travis Scott, he's among the biggest of them all. So it's not uncommon at a Travis Scott show to see or participate in a mosh pit. Depending on the act, depending on the venue, the seating arrangement, and the energy themselves, and if the artist calls for it, which Travis Scott has been known to do so in the past.
Sydney, how has Travis Scott responded so far to those 8 deaths? And we should note that the age range for those deaths is 14 to 27.
Yeah, well, as Sophia actually spoke about at the top of this segment, which I think she did an amazing job considering someone who's still processing being traumatized at this level, Travis Scott has made public statements on his social media, issuing statements and offering to pay for all funeral arrangements of the families of those 8 people. He has not yet, at present, publicly gone to see any of the people who are in the hospital as a result of this event. He has said he's refunding everyone's tickets, and he also announced that he has partnered with an online mental health service to offer free therapy services for anyone who feels traumatized by the event. And as you can hear from Sophia's voice, someone who is 5'1" and who was standing 15 feet away and who felt like she was in the thick of human whirlpool and quicksand, there's going to be a lot of people who feel like that. And I think what Sophia was saying about feeling like there was a total disregard for human life, especially when someone says they want to leave the crowd, when Travis himself is being alerted and saying, "Who told me to stop?" I think that's what a lot of fans are really holding on to. So even with all of these gestures, there are still multiple suits mounting against him. As of today, there's more than 30 civil suits mounted against Travis himself and Live Nation for failing to staff this event properly with security and medical personnel who are able to handle a crowd of this size and magnitude. And there's at least one criminal investigation underway by the Houston PD who are looking into reports that there's someone in the crowd who was involuntarily pricking people, specifically a security guard, in the neck with a needle. That security guard is just one of hundreds of people who had to be revived that night with anti-overdose medication.
Let's turn to a voicemail we got from Priscilla in Los Angeles.
I used to be a huge fan of Travis Scott, but after seeing what went down at Astroworld last weekend, I am completely horrified. I'm confused. My greatest concern is the absolute breakdown of communication that went down between security and between Travis's team and himself. I'm trying to understand why he didn't pause the show or stop the show and send a stronger message around safety.
Now, Steve, you were talking about the importance of stop teams, and I want you to explain exactly who's on those teams and how they work.
Yes, certainly. So it's a show stop team, and it's only comprised of sort of 6-7 people maximum. These are competent individuals that are well-versed with crowds in distress and are well-versed with crowds of the demographic that's attending that specific show. So, for example, they would be well-versed with the psychology of a hip-hop crowd. They would recognize if there's any moshing, that's the norm. That's the rules that they work by. But equally, they would be able to identify very quickly if there's a crowd in distress. Now, they have their own sectors of responsibility. They're in elevated positions, all with noise-cancelling headsets, and they are in consultation with a manager who's positioned on the side of stage. That individual is next to the artist's representative. That representative would have been identified in advance correspondence and at the day of show final safety and security briefing that in the event something happens and they need to call a show stop, that person will comply and will go out to the artist and say, stop the show. At which point the artist quite rightly is going to say what's going on. So he wants to know the reasons why. So the brief is, we've had a crowd collapse, we've got crowd in distress. At which point the front of house lighting designer will put white light above the crowd and white lights only. Brings the attention, all the sound is killed apart from that microphone. The crowd's attention is then sought from the performer. Hey, we've got a situation here. Everybody take a few steps back. That decreases the density in the crowd and allows people to move and get rid of the situation, address the situation. And only once it's been addressed do you restart it. Depending on the situation, you can restart or you can actually provide a cancellation. I've done some 25 show stops worldwide, and we've restarted all of them.
Sydney, remind us about Travis Scott's rise to fame. How did he earn that title, King of Rage?
Well, Travis Scott is a Houston-born and bred rapper who's been known to always push the envelope and always provide you with a high-energy, high-octane show. That reputation actually eclipses more of his rote rap abilities, more of his lyricism. You know, when you're going to a Travis Scott show, you're going to get this type of energy. And that's been a hallmark of his career, dating back to even before he dropped his breakthrough album called Astroworld, which is also named after the festival. It's always been a hallmark of his performances to create an atmosphere of near pandemonium like this. He often tries to incite a tornado of euphoric energy that feels like it's almost on the cusp of chaos. I've gone to a few shows myself during his career trajectory, and each time I personally know that I need to move farther and farther away from the stage, because the energy as you get closer to the stage just becomes almost controllable, almost unpalpable. But for many fans of his, that's the exact appeal. The point of seeing him live is to get out all of his pent-up energy, get rowdy, stage dive, mosh, and rage. And every time he's been on a festival, I'm sorry, I don't want to overstate, not every time he's been on a festival, but there is definitely a pattern of behavior to his inciting a crowd's energy and the consequences that ensue from that. In 2015 at Lollapalooza, he was charged with misconduct for trying to get fans to climb staging equipment and climb trees. In 2017 at a New York show, a fan jumped from a third story balcony, breaking both of his legs after Travis specifically saw him dangling off the balcony and asked, "Are you going to do it?" So when it comes to a Travis Scott show, it's all about pushing the boundaries of safety in a way that is not really new to Travis fans. This year, the difference was that it was pushed completely over the edge.
And you're referring there to a man named Kyle Green, who in 2017 was paralyzed. He was allegedly pushed over a balcony at a Travis Scott concert. He describes as being out of control. And his lawyer spoke to Rolling Stone. He said Kyle is, quote, even more incensed by the fact that it could have been avoided had Travis learned his lesson in the past. Steve, we've heard a lot about crowd surge and how that led to the deaths and casualties. Explain the dynamics of that. What actually happens when a crowd surges?
As human beings, we're made up of north of 50% water. So in effect, it's like a tidal wave, a tsunami in effect. So a crowd surge, if a artist comes on stage and let's say it's encouraging the crowd, we've got the countdown, they're inciting, you know, they're getting excited for it. Every artist on the planet is in a standing crowd. When that artist comes on stage, will compress. They'll want to get forward. And it's like a domino effect from the back. As soon as that first domino hits, the energy, the momentum is building up the closer and closer and closer it gets to a structure that's going to knock them back. They compress from the rear, they compress from the sides, and the people at the front are trying to push back. That causes squeeze in the middle. But in some instances, if the surge is that strong, it can split the front of the stage barrier, which we've had. And that's what you're monitoring for. You are monitoring for that instance. And if there's a life-threatening situation, that's exactly what your showstop team's there to identify.
We're talking about Astroworld and crowd safety. We'll be back with more after the break. And a reminder that you can join future conversations, download our 1A Vox Pop app, and leave us a voicemail.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Grifols. Senior Director of Corporate Affairs Vlasta Hakes explains the science behind the plasma-derived medicines the company produces.
Plasma contains proteins and antibodies. There are people who are missing those antibodies, or they're missing a protein that helps their body function. And what Grifols then does is we collect this plasma, and then isolate those proteins and antibodies to produce a medicine.
To learn more about donating plasma and to find a Grifols center near you, visit grifolsplasma.com.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get back to our discussion about Astroworld. We got this tweet from Vernon who says, regarding Travis Scott's concert, it seems that safety was not a focus of the fire chief, the police chief, concert officials, and the fans along with Scott. Everyone is to blame here. Now, the New York Times reported that the Houston police chief met with Scott before the concert and shared concerns about the crowd's energy and how difficult they would be to control. Steve, from videos of this concert, can you point out any protocols that seem to be missing?
No, not from the videos, to be honest with you. But one thing that does jump out to me is that no one from the videos that I've seen, no one's actually gone on stage and spoken to Travis. Mm-hmm. So whilst there's a focus of attention on him, no one, from the stuff that I've seen, has gone on and said, stop the show, we've got a problem. So that's the key protocol for me. You're going to have a high energy crowd. Everyone's thinking, oh, you know, my job, my pension, is this okay? Everything's got to be protected. Ultimately, you're there to protect those people, and those people are meant to come. They're meant to have a good time and release their, you know, build-up of aggression and, you know, lockdown phobia and whatnot. But they're meant to be going home safely as well. And sadly, they haven't.
And what role does law enforcement play in these types of events? Where's the line between law enforcement and private security?
Well, that's a very good question. So the roles and responsibilities are clearly defined in the planning phase. So that would be something that would be looked at, certainly. And it may well be that the organiser and the private security contractors have responsibility in the normal conditions. As soon as a major incident is declared, it may well be that the fire chief or the police department will assume control. That's certainly the case in the UK. So the role in the UK, as I say, is that the organiser and private security have full responsibility and control during normal conditions. As soon as a major incident is declared, or indeed, if the police or fire believe that it's got out of control and they've lost confidence, they will assume control. So it'd be interesting to see the event incident logs.
How do you stop a show, though, without causing panic and possibly, you know, causing a stampede or additional violence to break out?
So it's very straightforward. And if your listeners have been at shows, which I'm sure they have, where the shows have been stopped, panic doesn't ensue at all. The white light goes on. If you go back to your early days when you had your first girlfriend or boyfriend in your bedroom upstairs, you're up there having a little cuddle and your curtains are closed and the lights are off and your parents walk in and say, what are you doing? Then they turn the light on, but your attention is focused completely. Exactly the same in a show stop procedure. That white light comes on, the music's killed, and that performer's speaking, and everyone's going, whoa, what's happened? They then communicate to the crowd what to do. So, for example, whoa, we've got a situation here, folks. You need to take three paces back. We've got a bit of a crowd situation. They stay on the stage, and they're briefed in advance what to do and what their role is to cooperate for the safety of a life-threatening situation. You don't call a showstop for someone that's just tripped over and dropped their beer. It's for a life-threatening situation. And something I said in another interview just a moment ago, when we fly transatlantic, you know, we're on a jumbo jet or an A380, that's 500 or 600 passengers. That pilot on that aircraft has got years and years of experience and umpteen qualifications behind them. And they're there in case two engines, three engines, four engines fail. We've got autopilot, so that arguably that plane could fly itself, but they are there in the event of an emergency situation. Your showstop team should be that sort of caliber. They should be the people that can identify a crowd in distress and have no fear or conflict of interest whatsoever of saying stop the show.
Now, Sydney, Travis Scott was supposed to perform this weekend at a music festival in Las Vegas, but he canceled earlier this week. Do we have an understanding of what this could mean for his future concerts?
There have not been reports or statements made by Travis Scott and his team about what they're doing to assess how they're changing the not only the concerts he puts on, but the persona and aesthetic in hip hop that he represents, because it's directly linked to the type of actions that happen at his concerts. But I like that you brought up past incidences where this has happened at festivals. Of course, there is this great detailed formulaic nature of crowd control and protocol that Steve so expertly explained, and that most of the time can go off and ensure everyone's safety. But this is not an isolated incident when it comes to festivals of this size. There is that 1979 WHO festival. In 1999 at Woodstock 99, there were looting, bonfires, many people reported being sexually assaulted. In 2000 at Roskilde Festival in Denmark, 9 people died similarly from being trampled and suffocating during Pearl Jam's headlining set. And what makes those stand out is the legacy that these incidences, that these tragedies leave on the festival organizers and the band themselves. In the example of Pearl Jam immediately went to the aid of the families and members who in the crowd who were affected by this tragedy. And it said that they kept in touch with the family members of those who died for more than 20 years. And they even released a statement commemorating the victims during the 20th anniversary for it. So the trajectory of Travis Scott's career and how he handles this is going to determine his entire musical legacy.
Sydney, what are you looking out for as more details come out about what went wrong at Astroworld?
Well, we're looking out for, as you said, more details when it comes to the reports and accidents from Houston PD, Houston Fire Department, the medical practitioners and medical people who came to the aid and tried to save as many people as they could. We, in the hip-hop community, were definitely very vigilant of how Travis Scott responds to this, how other festivals are going to adapt and ensure crowd safety at this time. And I think the long-term effect is just how people are going to process being involved in something so traumatic, so shocking, so raw. And, you know, not vilifying individuals, but placing onus on the systems that failed these concert goers who were really just there to have a good time.
That's Sydney Madden. She's a reporter for NPR Music and co-host of the podcast Louder Than a Riot. Sydney, thanks so much. Also with us, Steve Allen. He's founder of the consulting group Crowd Safety. Steve, thanks for speaking with us. And you also heard earlier in the show from Sophia Santana. She's a survivor of the Astroworld tragedy. Today's producer was Sophia Alvarez-Boyd, with help from our intern, Katie Anastas. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. This is 1A.